Hi, I'm Al Majoros. I am a three-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. For some people, hockey is just a sport, but for me, it helped me fight cancer. And that's exactly what it did for this week's guest, Becky Nill. Becky is the wife to the assistant general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, a breast cancer survivor, and she's also a tireless cancer advocate. Let's meet her now. How are you today, Becky?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. So you work with one of my favorite teams, Red Wings. Well, your husband does, I should say.
Yes.
And I wanted to know, like, well, how you got diagnosed and then how you got into Hockey Fights Cancer.
Well, I was 1 year here in Michigan. Jim mm-hmm. had been offered the job from the Red Wings through Kenny Holland. And
What year was that?
That was 98 or 99.
Okay.
Yeah, it was 98. So we would move here in 98. And we had been with the Red Wings before, but we were living in Glens Falls, New York. So we were making the move to Michigan with me having three kids.
That's quite a move.
Yes. I had a 5-year-old, 9-year-old, and an 11-year-old when we moved here.
Wow.
We made the move so Jim could work more closely with Kenny and just be around the office a bit more. So upon arrival here, you know, you get caught up in the busyness of kids and schools and all that kind of stuff. But
right.
I remember on that vacation, we head down to Hilton Head for the American Hockey League meetings. When we can go to fun places with Jim, we follow him.
Sweet.
And we went to the Hilton Head meetings, and I remember doing a self-breast exam there, and, you know, fine. That was July. By August, I had felt a lump, which was kind of up, you know, high in my chest and not mm-hmm. where I would have typically thought you would feel a lump for breast cancer. I had no history, runner, all that kind of stuff. So I called the doctors here and got a bit of a runaround from a group for almost a month.
Oh, no.
And then I finally got a connection through Dave Lewis, was the assistant. I don't know if he was the assistant coach. I think he was assistant coach at the time.
Okay.
His wife, Brenda Lewis, had a doctor, and I had heard some stories about Brenda having some troubles, and so I contacted Brenda. When I went down to the hockey game that night, I was given a piece of paper from, I believe it was Dave Lewis, and it had this doctor on it and had all these phone numbers, and I don't even know what this doctor did, but I was at a point where I was, you know, desperate and trying to get whatever this was. I had been turned away. I had been denied appointments. I had been through the ringer with another facility. So I wasn't.
Why were you denied appointments? I mean, how old were you when you were?
I was 37 when mm-hmm. I was diagnosed.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that there's people at the counter, or I'm not sure why, but I would be standing at the counter with my appointment slip, and they would have a whole discussion. Well, you're going to have to come back tomorrow because I've got to leave. I got to get my kid to work, or I've got to do this. And I would be standing there with this piece of paper going, well, I just want to make an appointment for tomorrow or what
wow.
have you.
How unprofessional.
Yeah. There was a couple things. And, you know, what I learned along the way is I am not an aggressive person. I've never had any health issues.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to work that system of medical, is that, you know, when there's something wrong with you, you just don't stop until you get the right answer.
Exactly.
And or an answer. Sometimes the answer isn't always what you want to hear, but you got to keep plugging along, and just because denying it doesn't get you anywhere.
No, it doesn't.
So that's what I did. And as a matter of fact, some of those appointments, I did call these facilities back and just say, you know what, you canceled my appointment, and I will be at my scheduled appointment tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and we will discuss this. And I did get some apologies, and we, you know, we did end that, and I did move on to the next group. And I made a phone call that very next morning after getting that paper from the Lewis's, and called this doctor 9 o'clock in the morning. And I felt horrible because I don't even know. And she says to me, hey, I'm just in the grocery store, and can I call you back? So I'm like, oh, she must have three kids, and this is her only time to shop, and how busy. Well, I can just tell you this, Dr. Christine Watt did not take 10 minutes out of her more to grocery shop, but got in her car and phoned me and just asked me where I was, what I had done, what kind of did I know, and anything I had, whether films, x-rays, or anything, she said if I had it, to bring it down to her. And she let me know where she was, 50 minutes from my house, didn't even know the location, didn't know the hospital, didn't know anything. And Jim and I made plans that morning, left the three kids at home, and I grabbed a bag of Halloween candy because it was October 30th, I believe, and my kids had had a Halloween party, so of course I had meat breakfast. Grabbed the Halloween candy. I eat that on the way down to this appointment. And this Christine Watts, just in her calmness over the phone, just said, you know, it's a Saturday. Nobody's going to be here. So when you get to the hospital, things might be closed or shut down. And she said, but don't let that stop you. You need to go and just say, I need to go to this appointment place or this place, and you need to use my name to get anywhere in this hospital.
It's amazing.
So she empowered me right then to say, yes, I need to see her, and I will see her today. And from there, we went to the first desk. Nobody there. There's a note. Pick up the phone, dial such and such. It was like a movie. We do that. Then somebody meets us, and then eventually we get to Dr. Watt, who had been there on a Saturday doing work. And she looked at my films immediately, and she just, I could tell by her face that she was concerned just through my films about what she'd seen. And I just let her know that I was strong and that don't sugarcoat whatever she suspects. And she suspected that I probably had cancer. But she needed to make sure that, you know, what I had already been told and where I was going with things. And but there happened to be a doctor doing a surgery at the hospital, and he was doing a double mastectomy that day. Would we mind sticking around to meet him and see what his opinion was? Well, now, you have to understand, when we got to this appointment, no one asked us for insurance cards. No one asked us for how we were going to pay. No one.
That's pretty amazing.
No one really cared. She was just there because she knew that we needed help, and it doesn't matter who Jim is or I was. I'd never met this woman before, and she would do this for anybody.
Exactly. So was she just a regular general practitioner or oncologist?
She is not. She is a chief of mammography.
Oh, wow.
She is not any of surgeons. I know. So she reads those films constantly. She knows what she's looking at.
Right.
And she taught me then and there that it's just as important to have that film taken as it is to have read by the right people.
Exactly.
Which, you know, those are things that I've learned along the way. But within an hour, this doctor comes down, he does an exam, and he just says, you know, this is what I would do. This is what I, you know, think as well. He kind of confirmed what the other group had said, that, you know, we probably needed to do a biopsy, and I was ready to do it right then. And so he said, okay. He went to the phone on the wall in the room that we were in, and he called an entire nursing staff in.
Sweet.
And they prepped me with needles to locate the tumor and the density in my breasts, and they wheeled me to an operating room that afternoon. So we arrived probably at St. John's at 10 o'clock. I think by 12:30, 1 o'clock, I knew that, A, the tumor was out, and...
Wait, you had the surgery right there?
I did.
Oh, my goodness. I thought you were just going to say you had a biopsy.
Oh, no. I wanted him to take it off. So when I said I was ready, I was ready. So in this, too, you know, they want to put you out for surgeries, but I'm in a really good frame of mind, and I just know that it's, you know, it's not really in my hands. It's in God's hands, and right. He'll deal with it. So I asked to not be put out in any kind of way.
See, that,
I was
that's
maybe
where,
a little naive.
That's where we differ.
Yeah. So
we were talking before the show. That's totally where we differ.
Right? Yeah. Well, I guess I really didn't know. I hadn't had any experiences before. So we go into the operating room, and I really don't want to see the first initial slice kind of thing. But after that, I decided to raise my head because I was going to watch the surgery. And he stops moving, and the two nurses that were standing there stopped moving. And I said, what? And they're like, what are you doing? I said, well, I want to watch. Okay, that's when he thinks he should be working on my head. I'm sure that's what went through his mind.
Wow.
So he took three pieces out of me.
As you're watching?
Yes.
Oh, I would have passed out right there.
I think I just knew that there was something there, and I just, it was like, get it out of me. I want to see it go out of me. And, you know, when I would feel pain or whatever, he would just, I'd say, okay, I'm feeling it too much or too this or that, and he would cauterize more of the area and deaden it, and we would just kind of move on. So then, you know, stitch me back up, and then he stayed and went down to pathology to get the results while I, you know, I literally got off the operating room table, walked out of there, having no anesthesia, I was able to do that. And we sat there probably within 10 minutes. He came and he held our hand and just said it was cancer.
Wow. What stage did they stage you at?
And a couple days later, we went and got the details of the biopsy, and I was at stage 2 with positive receptors. You know, so for me, my cancer was very aggressive, and it was moving pretty quickly. So from 1 month to the next, where I didn't feel a single lump or bump, I had, you know, I would say this, it felt like the size of a quarter to me feeling it.
Right.
In just a short amount of time.
Wow. So what did you have a mastectomy, double mastectomy?
So in probably the next 10 days, I had a mastectomy just on that breast, on the one where the tumor is. And let me tell you, I went to 3 different people and saying, please take both, please take both. I don't need them. But, you know, I listen to the doctors, and they're right in. They don't want to take anything unless they have to or there's something really wrong. So I just, and still today, and so it's 12 years, and I just have, I've had reconstructive surgery, and I can do anything and more as far as physical endurance. And I just know my limitations with having mastectomy. There's always the chance that you could have the lymphedema.
Right.
And I am cautious of that, but I also know that I know what I can and can't do.
So do you have a lymphedema sleeve with, like, the Red Wings logos on it?
Yeah, actually, I probably would if I have not needed to. I've not developed the lymphedema.
Excellent.
And after my surgery, I did do 4 rounds of the most intense chemo.
Was it adriamycin, cytoxin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had that.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
So you had no hair for a while. And
yes, I had 12 weeks of Taxol also, and Herceptin.
Yes.
And radiation.
Okay. Did you have a mastectomy?
I had a lumpectomy.
You had a
lump. I had a lump that was pretty high up as well. That was like, oh. And of course, probably like you, they thought, oh, 37. Well, they never kind of prepped you for cancer, but when I got the phone call from the doctor, you know, how soon can you get here? I was like, oh, well, it's not good news.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems like it's younger and younger.
It does. It does. And I think, you know, yourself as an advocate and myself, we're trying to educate the medical community to prepare people for that, whether it is or not.
Yeah.
Because I know people who are 24 and have like stage 2 or 3 breast cancer.
Exactly.
And that's not right.
No.
Obviously.
And I know that when I was living in New York prior to coming here, and it was just quite new in the office where I was, and I remember seeing a sign posted on the door, you know, when you're age 35, you know, you're going to, you know, you'll get your first mammogram. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. And luckily, they were a place that was doing that in Glens Falls, and I had that first mammogram to compare.
Oh, that's good.
To the one that I had here, so they could see the change and the difference. But I look at these women who think, well, I'm not old enough, or maybe, you know, my doctor, we can't get it covered until I'm 40 or whatever. Are you kidding me? If you're suspicious.
Exactly.
If you have a history, if it's in your head and you think you got it, you need to go.
And the people who say, well, I don't have time for a mammogram, it's like, well, I didn't have time to take a year and a half off for cancer treatment either. But, you know, I mean, what's more important, your money, your money, or your life? I mean,
you can't buy time.
No, you can't.
And to be in denial or to not deal with it is robbing yourself of more time.
It is. And I know some people who didn't go to the doctor because of lack of money, lack of insurance. And unfortunately, they're not with us today.
Yeah.
Because of that.
And that's what I have noticed just recently in some of these hospitals and facilities is that we've got this whole push for awareness and, okay, and then they get the diagnosis, but then there's nothing that happens after them, because you can get diagnosed, but if they can't afford to go through the treatments and get the help that they need, then we're leaving them.
Well, the other thing is the hospitals do have to take you. They can't just say, oh, you have cancer? Well, you know, I mean, yes, you will have, like, an intense bill with, like, you know, lots of zeros behind it. But, you know, like we were talking before the show, I still owe lots of money for my doctors. And, you know, I can still sit here and look at the phone and be like, oh, I don't recognize that number and I'm not going to answer it.
Right.
You know, and I'm you know, and I'm here to advocate for, you know, for that kind of thing.
That's exactly it. But I think that mentality is definitely changing. Mm-hmm. And for all these breast cancer walks, and I can tell you that this St. John's facility is partnering with the Red Wings for this coming Thursday's game.
Okay.
And they are, a lot of the money that's being raised is going to go to people that don't have insurance.
Excellent.
And cannot afford this other stuff. And mm-hmm. It just gives me chills to think of how exciting that is for many people to be able to have that.
And especially keeping it in your local community, which has to be great for you. I mean, just imagine all the people that you'll be able to touch.
That's exactly it. And, you know, Andiamo's has this whole month, any entree that was purchased, they're donating as well. So there's just so many other companies and people that have gotten on board to help make this awareness just even stronger.
Awesome. So is that how you got involved with Hockey Fights Cancer? Just through your own cancer diagnoses?
Yes.
Yeah. And you were telling me that you are also a pretty tireless cancer advocate.
Yes. I realized upon diagnosis that it wasn't by chance that God chose me for this. Mm-hmm. And he is not a force I want to reckon with. And I just kind of said, he's in control, and I'm not going to just sit here and say, why me, and how come, and whatever. It says, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and just, you know, just put your big girl panties on and you just move. And there's so many girls that just don't even know the questions to ask or where to go or how to start or mm-hmm. things, and I will be, it doesn't matter if I'm at a store and I see a pink ribbon or somebody that has something, I will strike up a conversation, and I'll just find out that they either just got diagnosed or they know somebody that got diagnosed. And within a 24-hour span, I either got that person in my car and I'm taking them to a doctor's appointment, or I'm kind of empowering them on, okay, these are things that you need to do. You
right.
need to, this is the first step, and it's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
And
it's probably like you and when you heard you had cancer, all I heard was, like, after that was, like, the Peanuts voices. You know, like, wah, 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 tumor, wah, 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 staging. And then once that, you have to have somebody with you as your advocate, whether it be your significant other or family member. Or if you don't, I always tell people to bring one of those tape recorders or voice recorders. That way, if you forget something or you can listen to what the doctor says, you can listen later and then, you know, do like I did and you probably did, call them 10 times and say, hey, this doesn't seem right, or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, and being an empowered patient is very, very important.
It is. And not everybody has that personality.
No.
And I understand that. And I'm okay. You know, and we're talking that I have had somebody call me and said, oh, this person at my work, and she just got diagnosed. And I'll say, okay. And I'll talk to her. And the next day, meet me at CVS parking lot. I put this total stranger in my car. We drive for 50 minutes. I get all the family, you know, the whole history. And by the time we get there, you know, I'm going to sit out in the waiting room, I think, and I'm going to have her go in.
Right.
And then she's looking at me like, aren't you coming with me? I'm like, yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm right on it kind of thing. But I know the questions to ask.
Yes.
I'm not afraid to ask uncomfortable questions to the doctors, not in a judgmental way, but just in an enlightening way. And
right.
I want them to have that same empowerment.
I agree. And I say, if, you know, I'm sure the doctors have heard any kind of question that you're going to ask, even if it's embarrassing. And if I ask a question that they've never heard before, that's embarrassing. I want to know.
Yes.
I want it on the wall. You know,
yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but some of the things that I love sharing with the people that are going through their chemo, and because these are things that I didn't know anybody that had cancer. I didn't know anybody that had gone through chemo and
all
that. So I was going through this for the first time, and I remember sitting at the first chemo, and the drugs are going through me, and thinking, "Huh, this is okay. This isn't too bad." And but I remember the sensation in my nostrils, and all of a sudden, my nose starts running, and I'm thinking, "Oh, good heavens, I'm getting a cold on my first day of chemo," and you know, duh. Yeah. So that is truly the chemo and how it works so quickly in you. But I realized way into it that that running nose was all part of the chemo.
Oh,
and
yes.
Then eventually when I realized that I didn't have that sensation, you know, usually you could feel the you know, your nose run. But now it's way far into my chemo. I have no hair anywhere. And the liquid is hitting my lip, and I'm embarrassed when I'm talking to people. And I'm like, excuse me, I'm sorry, but what I realize is that I don't have any nose hair, and I don't have any hair in my lips, so I can't feel the liquid dripping down, you know, my
face
kind of thing. But people think, you know, the sore throats and the drainage and all of that kind of stuff, people are like, well, maybe I'm going to get strep throat, or maybe this. And I'm like, well, actually, no, that's part of chemo. And
you know what? I wasn't sick at all, surprisingly. I mean, with all the drugs they pump in you, it's like, wow, that was... Besides, obviously, the cancer, I'm like, I didn't get sick at all. And everyone around me was like, I don't want to say dropping like flies, but everyone got like colds and flu. And I think it was like one of the worst flu seasons when I got diagnosed. And I was like, well, whatever they're giving me pretty much killed everything off. So,
and I felt the same way. And I can remember when my hair started growing back. So I did my chemo and stuff and through the winter and, you know, did shots on a daily basis because I had trouble keeping my white counts up, and then eventually did the red counts and stuff. But when my hair started coming back, I was like, oh my goodness. A, I wished I would have put a Clairon blonde something in there so it would come back blonde because I, you know, have to do the highlights and stuff to make it look. So I wish I would have thought of that. But also, I didn't have any gray hair. And I was like, yes.
Oh, you're lucky. Mine came in like all gray. Super mad.
Huh. Well, so everybody has different things, but I'm not saying I don't have it now, but I was pretty happy that it didn't come in that way.
And well, yeah. And I had read about that, but still, it's just like, okay, so I've been bald for so long, and now I get hair, and now I look nothing like me. Sweet. You know.
It's gray, yeah. There's so many of those little things along the way, and I love being to share with the girls just those experiences about the drain tube and just that, you know, no, you're really not getting a cold. It's just the liquid that just drains. And, you know, you might have a few eyelashes and probably not this or that, but.
And don't worry if you don't feel like you'll be super hungry and then you won't be able to eat.
Yeah. I always try to explain to people it's a feeling of like you've had the flu. And, you know, whatever you might have had the last, you know, whether it was a chicken noodle soup or whatever, if you had that and then you kind of got sick, you kind of don't want to look at that again.
Yes.
And so it's just kind of that kind of feeling. But we're both here to say that it all goes away.
It does.
You know, and we're just doing what we can to help others get through it, make it easier, and empower and educate them.
Exactly. And like you, like we were talking before the show, I believe that, you know, I lived out in California working 16-hour days in the TV business. And then I moved here to northern Michigan where, you know, the pace is just a little bit slower.
Yeah.
I do honestly believe that, you know, had I been diagnosed in California, it would have been totally different. You know, it would have been not saying that I wouldn't be here, but it would have been different, obviously different doctors. And I wouldn't have the same close connection to them as I do now and have the people around me and be able to do what I do now as a cancer advocate if I was in California.
I relate to that. And I know that I really didn't know anybody here with going through this, but my kids had just put them to a new school. It was a Christian school. And there were people that were praying for me and sending meals and doing stuff for me. And I'm like, I just felt such a sense of love and peace.
Yes.
And joy, even though it was supposed to be the darkest days, as people said, in my life, I just never felt that. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any sadness, and I didn't have the why me and stuff, because I just, it was like it was something that I had to do, and I was going to do whatever. And, you know, that I'm just lucky that I've been able to live as long as I have with the drugs and all of the stuff that they had done for me.
And it's, you said it's 12 years now?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yep, this month is 12 years.
And then we'll also see you on Fox Sports Detroit, or FSN, during Thursday's game, because Thursday's Hockey Fights Cancer Night for the Red Wings.
Correct.
If people don't know, NHL does Hockey Fights Cancer. Every team has a night all throughout the month of October. And we'll see you on probably the Wingspan or the pregame or something.
Yes, wearing my pink.
Awesome.
And I hope that you can rally and join me down there.
I'm going to try.
It would be great to meet you, and
yes.
If you had any survivors or people that you could rally and drag with you. It's an amazing night because, as I said, I have these women come to my house here, and most of them I don't know. I have Sharon McLean, Paul McLean's wife. She helps me drive and shuttle, because, you know, when I invite somebody, and total stranger, to come to these games, the first thing that they're going is, oh, I can't do that. I can't drive down to the Jolos by myself. And they're all worked up. And I can't pay for that. No, it's all good. You just show up here and I will take care of you the whole rest of the night. And I've been thankful Sharon McLean the last 2 years has driven over to my house, and then she's packed her car full of people. And it's just a wonderful experience. And these girls who don't know each other at the beginning of the night, they have an instant connection and bond, and it really is just, it's an amazing thing.
It is.
Really, really neat. So I hope you'll be able to.
You know what? I'm going to try, and if the man can come with me, I'm sure I can find somebody who would want to go to a free Red Wings game.
Yeah.
So if people want to get a hold of you, Becky, how would they get a hold of you if they have any questions about survivorship or anything?
Well, you can email me, and that is J, like in Jim, the number 25694@AOL.com.
Oh, excellent. Awesome. And I'm going to try to get down there on Thursday.
Well, you know, you need to, you know, let me know if you're going to be able to make it down, and we'll figure out a way to make a connection to meet, because like you, I mean, we're talking and we've been emailing back and forth, but I'd like to actually have an opportunity to meet you.
Oh, same here.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, Becky. I'm going to wrap up.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Like I usually do, this is the Cancer Warrior, Mel Majoros. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, Mel Majoros. Become a fan of the show on Facebook, The Cancer Warrior, on EmpowerRadio.com. You can also check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And you know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.